Monday, August 12th, more than 100 German and British planes are reported in a new air battle over the southeast coast of England. Earlier in the morning, heavy anti-aircraft fire was said to have driven off waves of heavy bombers over the northeast coast. Other points were also bombed, but the government reported little damage done. From Rome, there's a communique which says Italians have made contact with heavy British concentrations in Somaliland. And now for the report of Edwin Hartrich in the German capital. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. The figures of the great air battle over the English Channel yesterday have been revised upward in the high command communique just released. It reports that 93 British planes were shot down during the day, while 21 German planes are reported to be missing. The total score put out by the high command last night was 89 British planes shot down, while 17 German planes were missing. There are a few new details about the great air battle yesterday. The German communique reports that two merchant ships and one destroyer in Portland Harbor were directly hit by Stuka bombers. And then another merchant ship was sunk in the nearby harbor of Weymouth. During the attack on the British convoy off the mouth of the Thames River, the Germans report that three merchant vessels were sunk, while two destroyers and four other merchant ships were directly hit by Stukas and seriously damaged. There was heavy air fighting during this engagement. Then last night we are told the German bombers heavily attacked aircraft factories at Filton, F-I-L-T-O-N, and True, T-W-G-R-E-E-E, and the harbor facilities at Cardiff and Bristol, and oil depots at Avonmouth. Anti-aircraft batteries were also bombed, and mines laid at the entrance of British harbors. This city is approximately 750 miles from the English Channel, where yesterday this great air battle took place. But if Berlin had had a ringside seat to the spectacle, the local papers couldn't be more enthusiastic about the official German results than they display this morning. Here are some of the headlines. The proudest victory of the German Air Force. Naval base at Portland destroyed. Annihilating blow of our fighting Air Force, and so on. The commentator of the Montag has this to say about the Channel air battles. Quote, "These German blows hit the British liars as well as its defense forces, and have proved German superiority in the air is uncontested, despite British claims to the contrary." This was an interesting demonstration of the German offensive methods, bit by bit, on the ground and in the air. The English convoys and their bases and their defenses will be smashed to bits. Unquote. This was the second big attack in 1 week on England. Correspondents here are of the opinion that the Germans will try to smash up the harbors, the naval bases, and their repair works, such as dry docks, and generally make marine traffic a hazardous venture in English waters. This would have the result of cutting down some imports of raw materials and foodstuffs for England. It is part of a softening up process. And if this strategy continues, one might compare it to the strategy of a boxer who spends the first few rounds repeatedly hitting his opponent in one spot. The opponent is weakened and then drops his guard, and the knockout blow flashes across to his chin. Well, before I return you to New York and switch over to London to hear what the CBS correspondents have to say about the air battle from their English vantage point, here are a few news items. According to a story in one of the morning papers from Belgrade, the German language is to take precedence over the French in Yugoslavia as the number one foreign language in the school curriculum. And the Foreign Office spokesman said here this morning that nothing has been decided as regards the French government moving from Vichy to Paris. However, there seems to be little indication that the Pétain administration will move back to Paris so long as it is occupied by German troops. Then the Folkshire Beobachter has an editorial attack on a Swedish editor this morning, Mr. Hansen, head of the Stockholm Aftonbladet. He's accused of being an Anglophile and upsetting the peace in that part of the world. This is Edwin Hartrich. I return you now to Columbia, New York.
That was Edwin Hartrich reporting from Berlin. And here's a dispatch from Rome. An official communique said today that Italian forces in British Somaliland had established contact with heavy British concentrations, and it was believed that an important battle was being fought. Reports which reached Rome indicated that infantry, motorized units, and native forces were engaged in a decisive fight. And now for the report of Eric Severide from the British capital.
This is London. There is no pause in Germany's air attack on Britain. The great continuous battles of yesterday, when according to London reports, 60 German planes were shot down and 26 British, has been followed up this morning by another mass attack. Only preliminary reports have reached London so far. However, it's believed here that about 100 aircraft were involved in a series of battles over the Channel and over the southeast coast this morning. One spectator reported seeing at least 5 planes falling in flames. And there was at least one attack on a balloon barrage. Meanwhile, remarkable stories of narrow escapes from yesterday's rain of bombs are still coming into London. A Mrs. Mabb at Portland ran to her garage, and as she reached it, her entire house collapsed in a heap. One woman was blown right out of her bathtub and was not hurt. At a small Portland chapel, children's Sunday school was going on when the raid began. The superintendent took 40 children to the basement. He kept them singing their hymns as the bombs crashed outside. None were hurt, although every window in the chapel was broken. The press this morning, of course, refers to the German claims about yesterday as farcical. British papers claim another air victory for their side. But the total of 26 British fighters lost comes to most English readers, I think, as a bit of a shock. On Thursday, when they reported having shot down 60 also, Britain lost only 16 fighters. New pom-pom guns firing a sensitive, exploding one-inch shell are reported to be having real success against the Nazi raiders. Particularly the raiders who swooped down to destroy the barrage balloons. Balloons anchored to convoy ships are favorably commented on after their first tryout. The chief difficulty is that they slow down the ships and are hard to handle in the stiff channel and North Sea winds. These bases on the coast of France and Holland give German bombers these advantages. They can use fighter escorts. They can carry more bombs and less gas. Their fighters carry more ammunition and less gas. They can surprise British defenses since they come over water and can get in the first blow before defending fighters can get up. But they have disadvantages in these raids as well. Their fastest fighters still can't accompany bombers, and their long-range fighters are believed to be outclassed by the British. When shot down, a German pilot is definitely lost. He's either in the sea near British territory or on British soil. British pilots, on the other hand, are often rescued, and a damaged machine can often put back to its field. And fighting right over their own soil, British aircraft can fly to the last minute of their range, then land and refuel and go up again. In that great series of battles yesterday, another German white-painted plane marked with a Red Cross was destroyed by the British. We're told the Germans use them as reconnaissance and servicing machines for their bomber squadrons, and England has warned Berlin that these machines will be destroyed on sight. Dispatches from Cairo this morning indicate that the Italian drive into British Somaliland has begun again. The two columns at Hargeisa and Odwina are pushing toward the principal British defense positions in the hills, spots which must be held if Somaliland is not to go entirely. And from Rome this morning, reports say that contact with the main British body of troops has already been made. There is no late news of the Italian column which holds Zeila on the coast. The Italian bombs have fallen on the naval base of Aden, across from Zeila. A Daily Telegraph correspondent, however, has just sent a wire to London from Aden. He declares that in a 1,300-mile convoy trip through the Red Sea, not one Italian submarine or bomber was sighted. Mr. Hoover's Food Commission, London hears, is definitely seeking to supply food to Holland, Belgium, Poland, and Norway. The British position is clear and unchanged. They will not permit it, so long as it lies within the power of their blockade to stop such shipments. But there's one food plan of which you will probably hear more very soon. It's not yet official. This is for Britain and America to jointly buy up North and South American grain reserves and hold them in stock. The peoples of the invaded lands would then be told that this food would arrive immediately once peace comes back to Europe. Many British people think it's a fair method, and its propaganda advantages to this country are more than obvious. I return you to CBS New York.
That was Eric Severide reporting from the British capital. And now from London, we take you to this nation's capital for the report of Albert Warner. Go ahead, Washington.
These mighty air battles over England seem to tend toward a climax in the near future. Perhaps an attempted invasion is in the immediate offing. Yet the talk, and what is more, the money of the representatives of the British Empire are indicating to official Washington their belief in a long war. For example, the British purchasing mission has told officials here that it wants to buy 4,000 tanks. It is, of course, impossible to procure any such number in the United States in the next few months. But the National Defense Commission expects that in the immediate future, medium-sized tanks will be turned out at the rate of 20 a day, far beyond anything done hitherto in this country. There is speculation over that British talk of a desire for 4,000 tanks. It's a number which, added to British production, seems considerably more than the British requirement for home defense. Could it be that Britain is even thinking of an offensive war on the continent in the more distant future? The plight of the British Army with respect to tanks when its expeditionary force was fighting in Flanders is illustrated by this story brought to Washington by a British expert. A tank brigade took 5 days to cover 120 miles in Flanders, a rate of something like 3 miles an hour. At the end of the 5 days, the tanks were abandoned. The men thought they could do better on foot. It was assumed the Germans would have no use for those abandoned tanks. The machines which are being ordered in this country will have a speed in excess of that of the German craft which cut France in two in a few days. The battle over the conscription bill resumes in the Senate today. Resumes for a week, perhaps 2 weeks, of oratory. Senator Edward Burke, co-author of the bill, says, "We turn over the floor today to the opponents of the bill. Let them state the grounds of their opposition." But the sentiment of the country is clear and definite, Burke adds. Every poll shows a 2-to-1 vote in favor of universal service. A veteran of the Senate, Norris of Nebraska, one of the men who voted against American entry into the World War, leads off for the opposition. During the present war, he has been a firm supporter of administration policy. He voted for various measures giving aid to the European opponents of Hitler. On a matter of conscription in this country, however, he leaves the president. Senator Wheeler and Republican Senator Taft may carry on after Norris for the opposition. A group of Midwestern senators and House members carry to William Knudsen and other members of the Defense Commission today their protest against the administration of the defense program. They complain that defense industrial orders are going to the eastern seaboard and the Midwest and Southwest are getting nothing. This dissatisfaction may extend to blocking the new tax legislation and its amortization features. Without that concession to industry, involving tax reduction for new plants built for emergency defense production, the whole defense program would be slowed up. Knudsen already has promised the allocation of new plants to the Midwest, but speed has required that the bulk of the orders go to established eastern industry. The Defense Commission is working on one policy change which will appease the Midwest. It's a program for negotiated contracts for the Army instead of the present procedure of competitive bids. The bidding system tends to concentrate orders in the East, which has the advantage of large established industry and also of proximity to the location of Army depots. The new system of negotiated contracts would send more orders to the Midwest. There's talk on Capitol Hill of a recess of Congress from early in September until after Election Day. After all, there is an election campaign, and some of these congressmen have fights on their hands. As it is, there is little they can do about primary campaigns, which are now underway. Take Senator Ashurst, who has been a senator ever since his state of Arizona joined the Union. "These are strange times," he says. "I have 4 opponents in the primary." But it couldn't be, you suggest to him, that a veteran like Ashurst would have any fears. "I wouldn't bet on anything these days," he says. "I wouldn't bet the Washington Monument is standing right now." This atmosphere of skepticism may require a congressional recess. We return you now to New York.
You have just heard the latest news as reported by Columbia correspondents in Berlin, London, and Washington. Edwin Hartrich reported from Berlin, Eric Severide from London, and Albert Warner from Washington. Tony Marvin speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.